the Ronald Reyes versus Holder case. Ms. Baldini Poterman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Maria Baldini Poterman, and I represent Petitioner Zambrano in the immigration case before the Court today.
You know where he is?
I'm sorry, please?
You know where he is?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. He is in Zacatecas.
You indicated that to counsel in the prior case?
Yes, Your Honor. If I may clarify some issues in the record, after I received a copy of the plea transcript, the sentencing transcript, and the motion to file with the motion to reopen Mr. Zambrano's case, I contacted Paul Gaziano about the errors of law that I saw. That was back in the spring. We were also in contact after I read the Seventh Circuit opening brief because I saw the errors of fact in the same record. And I spoke with Mr. Gaziano several times along with his appellate supervisor, and I advised him that Mr. Zambrano was, in fact, in Mexico. I spoke with Mr. Zambrano in Mexico during the appeal process and the petition for review process.
And so you have the specific location of where he is?
He is in Zacatecas.
I mean, to the best of your knowledge as of...
Yes. In a conference call, Your Honor, with the family members and Mr. Zambrano, he had affirmed that he was in Mexico in September and October.
Well, I understand Mexico.
Zacatecas?
I'm just concerned about representations to this court. So you have an address or a phone number for him?
I have it through the family. I don't have it written down in front of me, Your Honor, but yes.
I'm not asking you to represent it to me today. I just want to know... I'm troubled that you know and Mr. Gaziano does not know, because we had filings before the court that he could not contact, and that's why we had a request. We had a request waiver of argument, but part of it was based on an inability to contact the defendant in that case, and so you can see where my concern lies, since you're both members of the bar of this court. You've conveyed that to Mr. Gaziano. He seems to be not possessed of that information. You seem to be possessed of it today. That gives me some pause.
Your Honor, and I spoke with the daughter who is present in the court and with the rest of the family, and she indicated to me that she did affirmatively call Mr. Gaziano after receiving the letter. So there seems to be some issues on communication in this particular matter.
Well, like that famous movie line, there seems to be a lack of... communication.
Yes, Your Honor. To clear up a couple of questions from the last argument that were raised, I would like to address, was there a mechanism by which Mr. Gaziano could legally re-immigrate?
Mr. Zambrano. Mr. Gaziano, I think, is safely here.
I apologize. Mr. Zambrano could legally re-immigrate to the United States as a permanent resident. The answer is squarely and clearly no, following these 1996 legislation. He was ordered removed from the U.S. after having been convicted of an aggravated felony. Therefore, he is permanently barred under Section 212H of the Act, which is 8 U.S.C. 1182H. This court had previously affirmed that in a case called Quezada Luna, which is in our opening brief. In that instance, the court held the person had been convicted of an aggravated felony or a shooting offense and that he would be permanently barred from returning to the United States. So,
can I ask for clarification there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Initially there you said could not reenter as a lawful permanent resident. Could he return for a short-term visit?
He would have to apply, Your Honor, for a B1 or B2 visitor's visa and then obtain a waiver of the ground of inadmissibility in immigration parlance, known as a Section 212D3, which falls under 8 U.S.C. 1182D3. It is a temporary non-immigrant visa waiver. Based on my experience as a practitioner, it is rather difficult to obtain such a waiver after having been convicted and deported for an aggravated felony offense, such as the one presented in this case.
But notwithstanding that, had he had the opportunity to petition for 212C relief, then, you know, under the ancien regime that we now have, you know, the St. Cyr ruling on retroactivity about, so the statutes that you're talking about are non-retroactive. He could have overcome, you're saying, the barrier to being readmitted had the Attorney General chosen to exercise his discretion favorably.
Yes, Your Honor, and that would have been for a temporary short-term visit, not to reside permanently with his family on a non-immigrant visa with a non-immigrant waiver.
Even with the 212C?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I misunderstood the question. If he had been granted a 212C waiver, then he would remain a permanent resident of the United States, could travel, depart, come back.
Right, and so the fact is that even though under the law as it presently stands, if somebody does all of this stuff tomorrow, we understand that 212H is an absolute bar on aggravated felons ever coming back in lawful permanent residence status. But under the 212C regime that existed before these changes in the law, people like Mr. Zambrano could have sought an exercise of discretion from the Attorney General, and that this, I don't remember if it was your brief, but I remember reading that this was not uncommonly granted.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. And in fact, in Mr. Zambrano's particular case, it would be a rather compelling 212C grant. For one thing, he was sentenced to 6 months of periodic imprisonment. He was sentenced to 4 years of probation. The DCFS recommended that he return.
It makes one wonder what the circumstances of this offense actually were, because it seems like an extremely light sentence, and Judge Reinhardt in the other case doesn't seem to think it suggests he should be gone forever either.
That's correct, Your Honor. And although the immigration judge, as you raised in the last argument, does cite to matter Soriano, he doesn't address the issue of the availability of 212C.
Right. Patrick, so your argument depends very much on the proposition that 212C, you know, maybe was flittering around in the background, but is really not squarely before the immigration judge.
It never was. Mr. Connelly never said the word 212C waiver, Your Honor. He took the Landgraf test on retroactivity and applied it squarely to the aggravated felony definition. And the aggravated felony definition, statutory language through IRA-IRA, clearly said it applied retroactively to convictions entered before, on, or after. There was no such provision in 212C. Throughout the entire time that Mr. Connelly represented Mr. Zambrano before the IJ, as well as before the Board of Immigration Appeals, these circuits were splitting. Before the board issued the actual order in Mr. Zambrano's case in September 2000, seven circuits outside this circuit, respectfully, had agreed that if you pled guilty prior to enactment of IRA-IRA, you remained eligible for a 212C waiver. This issue was never properly raised or preserved by Mr. Connelly so that Mr. Zambrano would have had grounds to file a petition for review with this court, which at that time would have been denied based on this court's precedent, but then to seek a petition for cert, as so many other aliens in other circuits had done. And ultimately, at the point at which the board had actually issued the decision, the INS had already filed its petition for cert with the Supreme Court. So Attorney Connelly never gave any clear indication or any discussion that Mr. Zambrano even had an argument that he would be eligible for 212C.
In terms of arguing ineffective assistance of counsel, let's look more broadly at the criminal context as well. What would be your best authority for holding an attorney ineffective for failing to argue for or anticipate the overruling of controlling precedent?
Your Honor, in our opening brief, we did cite a decision, U.S. versus 10, which is out of the District Court of Connecticut. There also are other cases in the illegal reentry context, particularly out of the Ninth Circuit, the Second Circuit, and the First Circuit, in which the failure of an attorney to file an application for a 212C waiver was held to meet the prong under 1324D1, and therefore that it was found that the entry, the indictment for illegal reentry must be dismissed. I could provide those citations to you, Your Honor, in a 28J letter.
if we were to accept that theory, and it sounds pretty novel for the Seventh Circuit, if we were to accept that theory, what would the line be that you would advocate? There's a circuit split, that cert has been granted, that you've got one circuit, one district court decision that the lawyer should have known about, one law review article making the argument that the lawyer should have followed up on. Where would we draw those lines?
I understand your question, Your Honor, and it is a good question.
Thank you.
As the issues are presented, and we supplied the court with copies of every single version of interpreter releases demonstrating the splits among the district courts, the splits among the circuits, the arguments that were being made. An immigration attorney who was practicing between 96 and 2001 should have been aware that this was an issue that was being litigated and raised because it was such a change. It was a sea change in the law to repeal a 212C waiver.
When did it become something that they should know about so that we would say this person really was not competent?
Your Honor, the decisions started coming out from the district courts in 1997. I believe the first one was the District of Colorado. They continued to be issued, and if you recall, there was an uncertain period at that time after the 96 legislation was enacted. Did you go to the Circuit Court of Appeals to challenge a removal order, or did you go in habeas to district court? And so while the district court in the criminal case, if I may just address this briefly, had indicated that he should have sought a habeas, I believe the law at that point was unclear about where you needed to go. It was then clarified by the Supreme Court in St. Cyr and then again in Zedvitas, another case. So when you have a sea change in the law, Your Honor, I would argue that as seminars are being presented, attorneys are mandated to keep up with CLE, and the issue is being actively litigated, and attorneys should be aware through publications, through online listservs, through other avenues. This was not a novel theory at the time because of the sea change and the Landgraft arguments that were being raised. Attorney Cannelli knew about the Landgraft argument because he perfectly raised it, but to the wrong provision of the law. He never preserved the actual 212C retroactivity argument. He never raised it, never filed an application, didn't advise Mr. Zambrano, look, the circuits are splitting on this. But I believe, Your Honor, the fact that while the BIA appeal was pending, you had seven circuits that had gone the other way would have been a clear indication that an attorney should keep up with the changes and the developments in the law.
So do you believe a habeas should have been filed in this case, citing St. Cyr and Judulang?
A habeas, Your Honor, back in 2000 when he was deported,
after the criminal case.
After the criminal case, Your Honor, that was a discussion that was had between myself and Mr. Gaziano about whether there would be jurisdiction on this issue. I don't believe habeas is the route. I have advised Attorney Gaziano that a petition for writ of quorum nobis would be an avenue in which the issues can be addressed if this court were to remand the case or to otherwise.
Because he's finished his because of the custody?
Yes, Your Honor, because he's out of custody. He's in Mexico.
Right.
And I have obviously consulted with other experts on this field as well. I do believe that in this instance, though, he was never given the opportunity at the immigration court level to be advised to adequately preserve the issue, then seek a petition for review or assert to the Supreme Court. If he had been in this country just 9 more months on any of those grounds, he would have been eligible under St. Cyr's ruling to pursue a 212C waiver. And, Your Honors, in this particular instance, we really request that you find that there was an effective assistance of counsel, that the board erred in its decisions to find there was not an effective assistance of counsel, the due diligence, and grant Mr. Zambrano's petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Ms. Raka Afadu.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Remy Darocha Afadu on behalf of the Attorney General. This petition for review should be dismissed. Mr. Zambrano was convicted in 1993 of sexual abuse of a minor, and he has twice been lawfully removed from the United States. He chose not to petition for review of his original removal order, and he waited more than 10 years to seek reopening.
But when you say he chose not to petition for review from his original removal order, that really does implicate the fact that counsel didn't present to the immigration judge the 212C theory, the 212C ground, because that really structures everything else that followed.
Well, not exactly, Your Honor. He made the concerted, he made a decision.
Well, we don't know that.
It's in the record, Your Honor. He stated that he discussed with his wife, and they decided not to appeal the board's decision.
Well, but the point is, if the attorney, believe me, I mean, I know lots of lawyers who don't know immigration law inside out. You probably live with it every day. But the fact is, when the 212C theory isn't there, nobody seems to know, not the attorney, not Mr. Zambrano, no one seems to know that there is this avenue of seeking relief from the otherwise extremely serious consequences of the commission of an aggravated felony, namely permanent banning from the United States. So when you don't know, then sure, you might sit there and say, we don't see the point in appealing, because nobody's ever told you that there's one ground that might be helpful. And of course, if it's not raised, the Board of Immigration Appeals would have rejected it anyway for failure to exhaust. So it takes us right back to the effectiveness of counsel at the primary hearing here.
Yes, Your Honor. It does take us back to that. But the record shows, Your Honor, that at the time of his proceedings, of Mr. Zambrano's proceedings before the agency between 1997 and 1998, the prevailing rule in the circuit was that he was not entitled to a Section 212C waiver.
And we have said, though, that effective counsel need to pay attention to what's going on. Sad to say, this circuit doesn't have final wisdom on everything, and occasionally we get reversed by the Supreme Court. And lawyers frequently will raise arguments, even as to settled law, when we will say we respect that, we understand you're preserving this for other eyes to see. That's the way the system works. That's a perfectly responsible thing for a lawyer to do.
Yes, it is, Jenna, perfectly responsible for the lawyer to do. But in this case, Mr. Zambrano's previous counsel did not have the benefit of censure.
Well, it wasn't decided yet. But what if, you know, when you, by the time you have a conflict in the circuits out there on something, it may be, as Judge Hamilton says, that there is some point at which we would say responsible counsel don't have to start imagining chimeras under their bed. But on the other hand, conflict in the circuits doesn't strike me as all that close to the line.
Your Honor, at this time in particular, the circuit split was not quite as evident as opposing counsel makes it out to be.
Well, he doesn't appear before an IJ until June 23rd, 1998.
Yes, Your Honor.
So time has passed along. St. Cyr comes along 3 years later, in June of 2001. The board, though, doesn't get around to summarily affirming until 2000. So the IJ hearing is in 98. No one knows what the heck has happened with AEDPA and IRA-IRA and how they interact together and what's retroactive and what isn't. People are litigating all of those questions. We saw all of those cases.
Yes, Your Honor, but the First Circuit, the Second Circuit, where Sanchir came out of, was not even decided as of the time when...
So what? I mean, if people are litigating retroactivity issues about all sorts of provisions of the statute, especially a statute that's very clear about retroactivity on some points and doesn't say anything on others, why wouldn't a lawyer at least say, here's this, you know, ace in the hole, 212C relief, let's see if it might be available.
Well, considering that this circuit had firmly stated that such relief was not available to aliens like Mr. Zambrano, it was possible that his attorney made a tactical issue not to go ahead with that argument. Even if another circuit, because a circuit split is not a basis for finding ineffective assistance of counsel, Your Honor. I mean, this court has held it that there is no requirement that counsel forecast changes in the law. And so based on the prevailing rule in this circuit, there cannot be a finding of ineffective assistance of counsel in this case.
You know, but we do have rules in which there's real contradiction. We blame counsel for not raising arguments, even if they were long-shot arguments, and we say there's forfeiture of these points. But on the other hand, when counsel failed to raise arguments, now we're saying, well, you know, that's effective assistance, even though it's a forfeiture. How can it be an effective assistance to forfeit an argument?
Well, it was no forfeiture of an argument,
Your
Honor, considering the fact that this court had expressly stated that Mr. Zambrano was not eligible for a Section 212C relief. And that must have been the basis that prior counsel was operating under.
That's the Attorney General's whole position here. We've been wrong for a decade about everything on Mr. Zambrano's case, but nonetheless he has to stay in Mexico. That's it.
Well, Your Honor, even if the court decides for some reason that Mr. Zambrano's prior counsel was ineffective, the case doesn't end there. He still has to show due diligence. And he did not show that in this case. Mr. Zambrano came back into this country illegally. He sat on his rights for more than 10 years, did nothing until he was apprehended by DHS officials. It was not until then that he decided to
seek that may be your stronger argument,
representation. And he has not shown, the board correctly decided that he has not shown due diligence in this case. There cannot be a finding of due diligence in a situation where you sit for 10 years in this country illegally, you're working and you're making money, and you did not seek the assistance of any counsel whatsoever until after you were apprehended. It looks like Mrs. Zambrano never had any intent whatsoever to seek representation regarding what he could do about his case, which would have led him to have found out about any ineffective assistance of counsel earlier than he did, assuming that there is ineffective assistance of counsel in this case. Also, going back to the main issue in this case, Your Honor, we believe that the court essentially lacks jurisdiction to review this petition because of Mr. Zambrano's aggravated felony conviction. He is removable as an aggravated felon, and because the issues in this case are factual and discretionary issues, the court should dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. A case in point in the Ninth Circuit is the Alvarenga v. Ashcroft case, which mirrors Mr. Zambrano's case, where the Ninth Circuit expressly rejected all of the arguments raised in this case. Also, with respect to the issue of sua sponte reopening, the court also lacks jurisdiction to review that issue. The board gave very cogent reasons for denying the petition, for denying the appeal, the motion to reopen. The board noted that under Blake, which would have been the prevailing law at the time of Mr. Zambrano's proceedings, he would not have been entitled to a Section 212C relief at all. And although Judulang and Frederick have overruled that, the prevailing law at the time is what matters. And he cannot benefit, especially after coming in illegally into the United States, he cannot benefit from these new changes in the law, because it is well settled that once a decision is final, it does not apply retroactively. A new case does not apply retroactively.
Well, that's true for procedural things, but if the substantive law, as the Supreme Court has stated in other lines of cases, is clarified later by the Supreme Court, they're not making a change in the law. They're telling us what the law has been all along.
Yes, Your Honor, even in cases where they are saying what the law has been all along, it would have no effect whatsoever, Your Honor, because Mr. Zambrano's case was not on direct appeal. He did not appeal the board's decision in this case. He made that tactical decision himself. He had time to appeal it. He stated on the record that he did not have money to appeal it, and there is no evidence in the record that he would have appealed it, the decision.
Counsel, a moment ago you cited a Ninth Circuit case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Alvarenga against Ashcroft.
Yes,
Is that in your brief?
No, it's not in our brief.
Could you tell me where to find it?
It's Alvarenga v. Ashcroft, 271 F3D 1169, and it was decided in 2001. And it expressly, it's a case that mirrors Mr. Zambrano's, and the Ninth Circuit expressly rejected that all the arguments raised therein. Because it's an alien who, like Mr. Zambrano, came back into the U.S. illegally and wanted the benefit of Jitalang and all the changes that had happened in immigration law. So, Your Honors, in conclusion, Mr. Zambrano's removal was initial order was perfectly lawful under the law. And the conclusion that he wishes for simply elevates hope over reason. His quest for reopening more than 10 years after the original removal order is untenable because it thwarts the very principle of the finality in the judicial process. If Mr. Zambrano's case were reopened, it would open up a flood of litigation from so many sectors of cases that had long been decided and gone. And because this is in the context of an untimely motion to reopen, which is a heavily disfavored motion, the board's decision should withstand judicial review. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me extra rebuttal time, Your Honor. I would like to point the court's attention to the administrative record at page 272 to 273. We have listed out there, Your Honors, the Seventh Circuit's precedent regarding 212C. It was not until 1999 in the Turkan versus Perryman case that this court definitively ruled that 212C was not available to an alien who had pled guilty prior to IRA-IRA and EPA-EPA. The prior decisions by this court in 1998 and in 1997 had to do with the jurisdiction, and the court had a mousetrap argument that was made available in the case of Reyes-Hernandez. But prior to 1999, I would argue, Your Honors, this court had not definitively decided the 212C argument. So at the time that Mr. Cannelli was before the immigration judge with Mr. Zambrano, it was not an open and close issue decided by this court. Your Honors, regarding the issue that counsel has raised with respect to the due diligence argument, just to go through the history, the board's decision is rather disingenuous in saying that he was not eligible at the time that St. Cyr was issued. If he had been in this country when St. Cyr was issued, he would have been found eligible for a 212C waiver. He was eligible for 212C at the time he pled in 1993. As evidenced in the motion to reopen and in our opening brief, he didn't hide from the INS after his conviction. He affirmatively applied for naturalization, appeared for a naturalization interview in December of 1995. The service could have arrested him at that time and put him in proceedings. He was deportable at the time he fled for two crimes involving moral turpitude. He then relied upon his advice once he was put in removal proceedings after the change in the law, that on his counsel's assertion that he was not eligible for anything. And again, Attorney Cannelli never once raised the issue of 212C to him, or as we present in the affidavit of his wife, to his wife in the discussion. Therefore, the fact that he did not apply was also precluded by the Department of Justice's 2004 regulations, then the 2005 Matter of Blake decision. This court's affirmance of Blake in the Zamora versus Malari case, again in Frederick, and then until December 12th of 2011 when Judulon was issued by the Supreme Court. We ask this court to find that ineffective assistance to counsel was rendered. We also ask this court to note that his 1326 conviction is not final at this time as it is on direct review, and therefore the board's reasoning saying that he has been convicted a second time and would therefore be ineligible is also not founded by the procedural posture of both of these cases or the record.
Counsel, if I could, I'd like to, just with my colleague's indulgence, ask you about our jurisdiction here. I believe I understand your arguments about how Mr. Zambrano has been affected by the changes in the law here. But I'm troubled by parts of your brief that seem to suggest that questions about things like due diligence and discretionary relief equitable tolling and so on, wind up becoming constitutional or legal issues over which we might have jurisdiction. And your brief seems to point in the direction of really no governable limits on our jurisdiction. I would invite you to please tell us what you think the limits are between factual and discretionary issues on the one hand, legal and constitutional on the other hand, such that we could exercise jurisdiction over this decision.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for the question. Regarding the statutory rights that were in effect at the time that Mr. Zambrano was before the immigration judge, he had the statutory right to be represented by an attorney. He had the statutory right to present applications for relief, evidence in support of those applications for relief, and to call witnesses on his behalf. There is also the issue of a due process right to be represented by effective counsel. There has been substantial litigation over the matter of Lozada and what is the standard and what constitutes effective assistance of counsel. The most
recent. Does he have a constitutional right to counsel?
Your Honor, in the most recent matter of Compion 2 decision that was issued by Attorney General Holder, Attorney General Holder reaffirmed matter of Lozada. And in matter of Lozada, the Board of Immigration Appeals stated that the right to effective representation was a Fifth Amendment issue, a Fifth Amendment right. We pointed that out in our briefing as well.
Does an alien have right to court-appointed counsel or
government-appointed
counsel?
No, Your Honor. There is no right to court-appointed counsel in an immigration proceeding.
Right.
The statute under Section 240 says you have a right to representation by an attorney at no cost to the government.
Right. But if you – is the theory then if you bring in an attorney who is incompetent or ineffective – then you can pursue these kinds of claims, but if you appeared alone, you don't.
As far as a right to counsel, yes, Your Honor, that is correct. The board also has case law on issues of pro se aliens where the immigration judge has failed to advise an alien of the right to seek relief for which they are eligible. I could provide citations to this court in a 28-J letter if you would so.
We can find them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.